At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
You asked for it. Here it is. It's a podcast from Apathetic Enthusiasm.
In this episode, football is back, baby. Plus, we play a whole bunch of video games and watch some other TV shows. It's Apathetic Enthusiasm.
It's Apathetic Enthusiasm coming to you from SoFi Stadium in the hallowed district of Inglewood, California, where the Chargers and the Dolphins are playing today. If it was yesterday at 1:25 in the afternoon.
Pacific time, where Brandon had an amazing time watching his second football game in SoFi Stadium.
Yeah.
While I
second Chargers had, game I've seen
had ESPN game pass game preview game cast so that I could from the middle of the country follow the score and play by play, but not actually see the team that I've followed since my birth. The team you've seen twice now live in their home stadium and I've never seen in a professional football game. Hi, everybody. I'm Travis.
Hey, everybody. I am Brandon, Dolphin.
Big Dolphin over here. We've got a big old Dolphin. We'll talk a little bit more about that as we get into more of our episode. Thank you so much for joining us. Apathetic Enthusiasm, the show where we talk about whatever's on our mind. Most recently, that's been Rick and Morty. So if you are a Rick and Morty fan and are not checking out Interdimensional RSS, go check out our other podcasts as we gear up for season 7 of Rick and Morty. But we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about everything else going on in our lives. And if you want to follow along with any of that stuff that we post on the social internet, you can follow us on X. We are at Apathusiast. I'm at Jugglemino. He is at Barnyard Cruise. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/apatheticenthusiasmshow, or send us an email, apatheticenthusiasmshow@gmail.com. We are on Instagram, apathetic_enthusiasm. Our website, as always, apatheticenthusiasm.com. We've got some video versions of the podcast. You can watch what we look like. You can see how closely our shirts match in color. If you go to youtube.com/apatheticenthusiasm. Finally, big shout out to the patrons over at patreon.com/apatheticenthusiasm, which I got feedback today. And this is from a coworker who has been sampling our podcast. He says, I don't shout out our patrons enough when I just gloss over the lovely patrons at patreon.com/apatheticenthusiasm. So thank you again. I'm not going to mention any of you by name because frankly, I don't have a list in front of me right now. but you guys are the best. And really, for those of you that have been there for a long time, continuing to support us, either you've forgotten that this is a bill that gets pulled out every month, or you're just the best at support. And either way, we appreciate it. So thank you for being a
patron. Either way, we appreciate you. Tipping one out for you, Evan Williams.
Old Evie Will. I realized I bought a ton of jalapeno limeade from Trader Joe's this year. Because it's such a refreshing, like sweet, but spicy, sort of just refreshing beverage. Mix it with a little tequila, a little bit of vodka, what have you. It makes for a lovely summer treat. And I barely drank any of it this summer. And now summer is like over. So I'm having to go through lots of delicious jalapeno limeade from Trader Joe's. Not a sponsor.
You gotta do it. You gotta cut into the mixers and the bitters. I'm
trying to follow your lead, Brandon. Did you muddle another cutie? Poor cuties.
I muddled two more cuties for this Evan Williams 7-Up drink.
Well, thank you for being here. We have plenty to talk about. We are going to do our best not to be distracted by the return of football and this season's first Monday Night Football tonight on ESPN, because a lot is happening in the sports world, and the avid Apathetic Enthusiasm listener will know that as a rule, I mean, we don't talk too much about sports on this podcast. And I think a big reason for that is because
people who listen to this show don't care about sports.
Don't care for sports. Yes. That is an assumption we make about you, the listener.
Yeah.
And also, like, you've been mocked in the past for your level of following of sports. Is that not correct?
That is correct, actually, Travis. It is correct that I've been mocked.
Openly mocked, I'll say.
In the past.
Both online and in person.
In the past. And it's a joke that keeps on giving. Especially by Bob Carroll, an actual sponsor of the show.
Please refer to him as the Commissioner Bob Carroll. It is Swiffle season after all.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the Commissioner Bob Carroll. He's always made fun. It's the joke that has been living with me forever and ever and ever in a day when I used to work for Bob, and I was like, I don't follow sports that much. And I like sports game. I probably said sports games. And he's like, oh, sports games. What a loser.
Sports ball. What are you talking about? Sports ball. Look, get a load of this guy.
And that was mostly like when we're doing like physical training, like organized physical training. And I'm like, I don't sport, you know? And anyway, so it stuck with me. And the thing is, I don't watch baseball. I understand baseball. I understand how to play it. I understand the rules. I know their strategy. I get it. I don't watch basketball. I know all the rules. I know the strategy. I know all these things. I don't watch it. I like soccer, which is coincidentally the sport that Bob doesn't like.
The one sport that Bob doesn't have time for.
and of course football. And football for a long time, you know, I watched the Dolphins. The Dolphins is my team. I understand the game. I understand the rules. I played lots of football games as far as EA Sports, Madden.
It's in the game.
So, you know, I get all of that. I understand all of it, and I enjoy it. But I was never like, yeah, this player, that player, that player. Oh, this player is going to be, oh, blah, blah, blah. Oh, the defense.
Yeah.
So I am sportier than most non-sports people. Because I understand, I know a lot about all of it, but it's just not something I choose to spend my time on mostly, unless it's fantasy football.
That's right. Yeah. I find that about, I don't know, two decades ago, when we both started working in the same place, I mean, I've always liked sports. I've enjoyed watching sports. So this is something I connected with my dad a lot growing up, and he was a huge sports fan. He was always watching something competitive. And I just grew up in San Diego as a Chargers fan, specifically like to just watch the Chargers. Now, I wasn't an NFL fan at large, and I find like I was like a casual fan to the level of where I knew some of the big names, some of the major players, but I wasn't like memorizing the roster, knowing like everybody that was playing, things like that. So when people mention like random, even Chargers players from the like 90s and 2000s, I'm like, yeah, that sounds vaguely familiar as a guy that I recognize. Junior, what? Junior, say what? Yeah, I'm sure he played there. LaDainian Tomlinson, I don't know. LT.
Say yeah. Who? Say what?
Say who? Say ow.
Hey, I mean, you know.
I wonder if I've told, have I told my junior say ow story? Yeah, on this podcast before?
Maybe not on the podcast, but you, you've told me certainly about how he is not your favorite Chargers player.
He just, my one in-person experience with Junior Seau, rest in peace, was not pleasant, but still credit him as a phenomenal NFL player.
Yeah.
And yeah,
I don't know. I don't know if you know this, Travis, as a Chargers fan, but he is the Charger that has received most Pro Bowl nominations or something like that.
That tracks. I could see that. Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go.
For now.
We got Eckler.
Right, Herbo.
We got Allen Eckler or whatever.
Austin Eckler. Who wants to leave the team. Anyway, so yeah, football's back, and we've talked about it a little bit. One thing that's really helped both of us to reinforce our interest with football is, of course, fantasy football. I've been playing fantasy football for years. You off and on, I think, like some pickup leagues, random stuff, but never like a dedicated league, right? Or is there some closet league that you've been playing for years that I don't know of?
Well, yeah, so we're talking about the Southwestern Football League, which is run by Commissioner Bob Carroll, which has been the league that has been going on forever.
Well, since the dawn of time.
Well, the elite of the elite, or the people that Bob's known the longest, have been part of this league, right?
And I think there's like a prerequisite that they all have had to work like with the same organization at some point in time.
Yeah.
Or that's just a weird coincidence that's still the case.
but other than Swiffle, for shorthand, there was Bob's other league for the people who were not quite ready for Swiffle prime time. And
wasn't that the name of the league is like not quite ready for Swiffle? Like, I think that was the ESPN league.
I forget which one it is. Yeah. But so I did that one for a couple of years, and then he stopped inviting me to it. So I was like, maybe not this year. I was in a league for 2 years with people out of Colorado Springs, people I worked with there. And then actually like one person I worked with there, it was his friends. And then I won that league 2 years in a row. And like won $300 total. And then I was like, 2 years in a row? I'm good enough. I'm good. I'm not gonna press my luck anymore. And I think that may have been my last foray into fantasy until really this year. I everyone knows talking about fantasy, everyone has their leagues already. And so I got out of the habit. And I think, you know, the thing about football for me is I'm more interested in football when I am doing fantasy stuff. Like
100%.
I'm interested in football, sure, but like I wouldn't be watching the Jets game right now.
Not a chance.
not a chance. Well, maybe I would because the Jets and the Bills, right? Maybe I would. Plus, it's Monday night. But I'm more inclined to watch it and listen to it on Sirius XM because I'm like, okay, all right, Travis is going to beat me this game, but I have my other fantasy league that I'm already 99% sure going to win that one, but
yeah. I think that is funny that it just so happened that our favorite NFL teams were playing each other on the same weekend that we were facing off in Swiffle. So there's just like a lot of overlap, and there's so many ways that your heart can go on this roller coaster ride of emotions when your favorite NFL team is performing well, but your fantasy team is suffering. And then all of a sudden, like your favorite NFL team blows it, but in the same breath, like three of your players get touchdowns on your fantasy team. And then all of a sudden you're like, hey, okay, I don't know whether to be happy or sad right now. But that's sort of how my weekend went. And I think I agree with you 100% that having different fantasy leagues, it's a way to bond with groups of friends. I did see a video this weekend that said because the guy had never won his fantasy league, it's just like an annual $100 that he pays to be in an exclusive group chat with his old friends. And then occasionally they have an annual Zoom call. But otherwise, like, that's about it.
I've never
won Swiffle. I will say that. I think I've made the playoffs a couple times. But who knows? I'm starting off strong. so far this year. But not in the same way, my NFL team, the Chargers, have lost their opening game. So
yeah,
it's fun stuff.
It's a game. It's not multiple games yet. It's a game that they lost.
Yeah.
It's a
big season's early. Season's young.
I'm losing in Swiffle this week to you. I will lose to you unless Dalvin Cook comes up with like 50 more touchdowns. And he hasn't had
like
any
four touchdowns and the Bills have to give up like 80 points.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal. So it's fine. So it's going to be close.
If Cook gets those touchdowns, then it's going to make your Bills defense go negative.
It's a win-win for you. It's a win-win.
Yeah.
Too many cooks.
Too many cooks.
So one of the things that I thought would be interesting to talk about is the enhancement of enjoyment for the NFL, right? We talk about how fantasy helps us enjoy the NFL more, but we're established. We're bought in. NFL is a thing that we're going to pay attention to some degree for a period of time. But the NFL's out here and they gotta get after that next generation.
Uh-huh.
They gotta get after those kids. They gotta lure in those kids by whatever means necessary. And I've noticed there
Toy Story,
is a
Sunday fun day.
Yeah. So we're watching tonight's game, Monday Night Football, and there is an advertisement for next week, Sunday fun day, where streaming on Disney Plus and I think ESPN Plus, they are doing a Toy Story-esque overlay for the, I think it's the Atlanta Falcons and like Jacksonville Jaguars game, mm-hmm. Where they're doing like a fun overlay with like Toy Story characters and stuff like that, which I guess is a way to bring in kids to get them more interested in football. But this isn't the only time I've seen this. This is still a thing that Nickelodeon has been doing. They've dabbled with it over a couple of years. And now I think they have maybe like a full season of games set up where Nickelodeon is doing these overlays over the game to include like alternate reality effects where like the end zone will explode with slime, or like they'll have like a slime cam and like all this stuff where, you know, confetti, like AR confetti will like shoot out of the corners of the field and stuff.
Yeah.
To add an extra level of, you know,
immersion, excitement for the game.
ADD. I don't know what it is for like the kids to be like more interested in the game. What do you think of these tactics? What do you think about, you know, the cable channels trying to stay relevant by rebroadcasting these games for kids?
So there's a game, the whole game is played and then they rebroadcast it with all the extra shit on top of it. That's what you're saying?
Now I think they're doing this for some live games where they've got just pre-built in content and they'll just be like, boom, stick that overlay on.
Press a button. Oh, Dalvin Cook is
out
slime.
The slime.
Like, oh, wah, wah, Aaron Rodgers is injured.
Womp, womp, wow.
You should have taken the double dare instead of the physical challenge. What do I think of it? I mean, I don't know. It reeks of boomer mentality. It's kind of
a little bit, yeah.
It's like, hey, oh my God, we're all gonna die. We need to get kids into these games. We need to get them stuck with it. I don't know if kids have to be interested in it, first of all, but also your parents have to be, your kids' parents have to be interested in watching a game like that.
Yeah,
and that's where the connection has to happen. That's where the linkages have to happen. First of all, the kid has to want to be interested in watching a football game. Whether or not there's effects or not, like the kid has to be interested in and want to see that. Also, the parent who's like wants to get drunk and wants to watch football has to be like, yeah, let's watch this, Bryce. And then so now they're doing it together. That's what has to happen. I haven't heard anything about those kind of AR things with games.
I don't think I've ever watched either of those broadcasts, but I'm like just a little bit curious about this Disney take on it with the Toy Story stuff, just to see if it's just going to be awful. Will it ruin the game? Will it make the game any more interesting for kids to watch? Or is it just some guy from a boardroom's really bad idea that they're like, whatever, just give him some money and some digital assets and let him go for it.
Here's what I'll say, Travis. When I was a kid, when I was a young buck, same age as you, basically just a year older, I wasn't a huge football fan. We didn't watch football every weekend. The Cruises, Randy Cruz and I, or Tim Cruz, my older brother, we didn't watch football. The only time we watched football was during the Super Bowl. That was when we watched football, because we didn't have mm-hmm. a team. I didn't have the Raiders, Rams, whatever. We didn't care until the Super Bowl came around. Then we'd go to the Elks Lodge, where my grandpa was did a lot of stuff with the Elks Lodge, and that was the event. So like the Cowboys in the mid 90s, setting up the dynasty and all that type of stuff. Like those are the games we watched.
Sure.
But the story is going somewhere, because what interested me in football back then were the commercials. Sure. Right.
Sure.
That's
especially during the Super Bowl.
That's a thing. But the Bud Bowl, man, the animated Bud Bowl. Puppy Bowl is good too, but the Bud Bowl, like, that was just so great to me.
All the little Budweiser bottles with the exciting little helmets on, exciting, squaring up against each other.
You know, if you want kids to be interested in football, you give them
beer advertising.
You give them like really, really cool things to watch in between the games themselves, because that's kind of like that's what kept my attention throughout the game. I think when you're at the stadium, there's stuff going on all the time. At SoFi, it's called the Infinity Screen because it just keeps going around in a circle. But there's stuff to watch up there all the time in between plays and stuff like that. That's what holds your attention. That's what holds kids' attention. And so
I was going to ask about that, because you brought your son to the game, and I'm assuming not a huge football fan traditionally. How did he feel about it? Was he just watching that infinity screen the whole time, or was he more engaged with the game and interested in what was going on with the players and what was happening down on the field?
Yeah. So my kid is not a football fan at all, which was surprising, right? Like, it's surprising that he wanted to go with me to the game. So one of my buddies has season tickets, and so he sold them to me to see the Dolphins Chargers. And I was telling my kid, all right, I got tickets to the football game. I'm going to go. I'm excited. I might probably go with mom. He's like, oh, I want to go. I said, oh, really? You want to go? He's like, yeah. Okay. You like football? He's like, eh.
You heard me say football, right?
Yeah, I'd like to go. I'm like, okay, all right. And so then a couple weeks later, I'm like, hey, about that football game, you still want to go? He's like, yeah. I'm like, okay, all right, here we go.
All right.
I ordered him a little Dolphins jersey, and we got ready to go. So we show up to SoFi. I spent a little bit extra on parking, so we didn't have to walk that far. And so he is very much me, much younger in my life without Zoloft, with like social anxiety and like big crowds and like feeling uncomfortable around a lot of crowds and stuff like that. So I'm wearing a Junior Seau jersey for the Dolphins Junior Seau jersey, number 55. I get out and we're walking, and some guys are in their van, the Chargers fans, and like, hey, undercover Seau fan, we see you. You get a pass, man. Like, all right, right on. And they're like, all right, have fun. And then they say to my kid, like, hey, have fun, man. And he's like,
because we're going to murder you after this game.
Hey, thank you. and so like just a lot of like, there's a lot of people. He doesn't know how to feel. So then we get into the game, the first half. He's like watching it along with me, not really saying anything. And the second half rolls around, and I gave him my phone. And so he had my phone playing a game, and I had it in low power mode, so he could play lots and lots of games. and he's playing a game. There's surprisingly a large amount of Dolphins fans in the stadium yesterday.
I mean,
I know
if any team has visiting crowds outnumber their home crowd on a regular basis, it's the Los Angeles Chargers. It's the unwanted in their own hometown, Los Angeles Chargers.
It's true. San Diego is too far of a drive, my friend points out. Anyway, so I'm surrounded by Dolphins fans. And so my kid is like playing the game. And I'm like, I'm just letting him do his thing. And everyone's like talking to him like, oh, check this out. There's a play here. They're going for it, you know. And so what he would get into the habit of doing is like when the fans around us stood up and started screaming, then he'd be looking at his phone. And then sit back down and go back down. Like, perfect. That's the gateway drug.
Level of interest we're looking for.
That's the gateway drug. That's your dad. That's how I've been for a long time. But you know, like, so he said he had a much better time the second half. And I think he was excited to be there. I don't think it's not his sport. I asked him after, like, do you want to go to another game? He's like, not for a while. I'm like, don't worry. The Chargers won't play the Dolphins again until next year at least, and it'll probably be in Miami. So,
yeah, fair enough. Road trip. Road trip. Let's go see him in Miami. I get that. Like, obviously, in Oklahoma City, we don't have NFL teams. There's a lot of college sports excitement here, but for me, the Oklahoma City Thunder, I became a fan of that team. Their first season in Oklahoma City, been a fan ever since. My son has really gravitated more towards basketball typically than football. So any opportunity to go see the Thunder live, he's all for. But surprisingly, my other kids really got into it too. And they all really enjoy going to games. So I think there's something about being there live, the crowd, the excitement, that the action's a little bit more in your face. And it's not just, you're not just passively watching it on your couch where there's other options like video games or phone. I mean, you obviously have your phone with you, but it just, you feel more present and part of the action, which I think helps to really stay engaged with the game. My youngest, she would not watch sports on TV to save her life. But you take her to a Thunder game and she's watching, she's paying attention to the game. She's tracking the action and stuff like that. So yeah. I think being there live goes a long way for helping reinforce that excitement and interest in whatever sport or activity.
It is definitely a different feel. Like on TV, whatever game you're watching, whatever sport you're watching, they talk about like momentum shifts. They talk about like, oh, this happened, and oh, there's a clear momentum shift on the field, and it's so
really taking the wind out of this crowd.
And it's really, really interesting because you can't feel that on TV. It's not the maybe you can get a sense of like, oh yeah, like, oh, Aaron Rodgers is out. I'm going to go back to that because it's the most recent thing. Like, Rodgers is out.
Yeah.
There was so much excitement for the Jets to have him come out and like they're going to change the AFC East. And then third play, he's injured. He's out for the rest of the game. And in the season opener, and how crushing that is to be on that field, to be in that stadium when that happens. It's different when you're there because you can just feel this energy change. When something bad is happening, you're like, this game is about to end. And they're like, you know, like there's displays all around, there's advertisements, there's people getting up. Like you can see the crowd like getting up and like walking off and stuff like that. You can just feel it. And like the first game I went to last year, when you start feeling that momentum shift, that just this despondency, it's very, very, it's really, really interesting. And that was like the first time I understood and recognized, okay, that's what we're talking about. And yeah, it's really cool. So the Chargers and the Dolphins, they played, speaking of shifts, it was a hell of a game, Travis. And
it was close, pretty much down to the end. Yeah.
Yeah. Down to the end. I asked my son as we were leaving, a little bit later, I said, "Hey son, would you rather have stayed to watch this thrilling ending to this amazing game or avoided traffic?" And he said, "Avoiding traffic." And I'm like, "Hell yeah, that's my kid," right? Because he's like, "Because we're going to celebrate at home. It doesn't matter if we celebrate here or at home, we're going to celebrate." I'm like, "Damn right about that, kid."
Yeah. Meanwhile, my kids, I'm like, "Hey, it's a 30-point blowout. Should we head for the car?" "No, there's still eight minutes left. We gotta watch every second."
Nope.
I'm like, "All right, I don't have LA traffic to contend with."
That's true.
I will be fine. That is fine.
Here's what I wanted to say about being in the stadium as well. And for me, again, I'm sports ball guy. I'm not a sporty guy. It's so weird being in the stadium because you just. Maybe not just in the stadium, just in like the last couple of years, maybe where I'll be watching a game and something good will happen. And then like instinctively, yeah, stand up right away. Oh, woo! Tua throws the hill. I'm like instantly like, yeah, yeah. Woo! Right. and then I sit down like, "Whoa, where'd that come from?
Who is that guy?
what the hell just happened there?"
That's good. That is good to hear. I'm excited for you. I'm glad you got to be there for a game where your team won. Congrats.
Yeah.
Someday I'll see an NFL game in person that isn't a Pro Bowl that I got free tickets for.
Next year, Travis, I'll get tickets for my buddy. You'll come down. We'll go see it. We'll go see a game at SoFi Stadium.
Ooh, can't wait. It'll be a blast away. All right, let's keep. We have other things to talk about, even though we've gotten through a half hour of sports ball talk. If you're still with us, we're gonna take a hard right turn and start talking about the other games that we're passionate about. Those, of course, being video games.
Oh yeah,
Brandon. We have not had an opportunity to talk about any of the games that we've been playing. And I've been playing a game for close to a month now. Starfield's been out for a couple of weeks. How is it going? How is your space Fallout going? How are you feeling? You're what, 2 weeks into it now?
Yeah, about 2 weeks into it. The game came out in early access about 2 weeks ago. For Labor Day weekend, and if you have Game Pass, you get to play it maybe like the 4th or 5th of September, right after Labor Day. But you could have paid $30 for some extra content and early access. And so it was a 4-day weekend for me. I didn't know what I was gonna do, so I said, "Shit, hell, bollocks! I'll go ahead and spend the money, I'll get the extra content and play it." And so. Since then, I've been playing it. I stay up a little bit late at night, and I play a little bit. Sometimes I wake up early in the morning. I play a little bit just to do a mission or two or scan mm-hmm. a planet or whatever. And so I'm having a good time with it. I am intentionally not going through the main campaign because I don't want to beat it. Because if I beat it, then I'll be like, "Okay, well, dump. That's it.
That's it for me.
Don't need to go.
I'm all done." Yeah.
Back in the Mass Effect days where I don't know if you experienced this, if you did Mass Effect stuff.
I didn't really play Mass Effect. Okay. I think I picked it up for a little bit, but never really got too into it.
Okay. So Mass Effect days, when Mass Effect first came out, played the shit out of it. And you can, you play through it. You're like a good guy, a bad guy, or a middle guy, basically. And that game was good enough for me that I played through it three times that's several hours. Mass yeah. Effect 2, I thought about, I think I maybe did a good guy and bad guy run. into Mass Effect 3. By the time Mass Effect 3 came out, I was like, nah, just one run through is good, because my mentality had shifted. So I feel that way about Starfield, where it's kind of thing, same thing with like Fallout 4, and where I'm going to pick one run through. And if I come back to it later, or Cyberpunk 2, if I come back to it, cool. If not, great. But because you can be an a-hole in this, just like any Bethesda game. But I'm generally a pretty good guy, mostly because I'm trying to have sex with one of my companions.
I'm playing Baldur's Gate 3. That is my current gaming obsession. And I totally get what you're saying with the whole multiple playthroughs and how you approach it, right? Whether you're a good character, a bad character, you know, somewhere in between. I have a tendency in almost every role-playing game that I play to play a more lawful good type character, because generally by nature, that is who I am. I am a huge rule follower, just in life, and generally try to be a good person, right? And so as I'm doing these playthroughs, I just instinctively start like picking heroic type things and treating people nicely and trying to, you know, sort of, you know, bring down the temperature in the room, so stabilize situations and things like that. But there is a part of me that feels like there would like this first playthrough is me playing it as if I was the character. And then I'm always having the back of my mind, I'm like, ooh, I could play an evil character and just pick the opposite of what I normally would do and just be mean to all these people and just like fight my way out of situations and just see what happens, right? Mm-hmm. The issue is I never maintain interest long enough to get to that second playthrough. And with Baldur's Gate 3 being a game that has hundreds of hours, if not thousands of hours of potential content within it, this game could literally take me like decades to play. And I probably would still see new parts of it. So I'm taking my time. I am not just blasting through the main campaign like I almost was in my initial attempt of the game. But the game is really good. It's really fun and it's great because it's like playing D&D when I don't have any friends.
Yeah. I want to talk about the D&D aspect of it here in a second. Just to finish up the Starfield piece though. So the great thing about Starfield is like if you are a sci-fi fan, then you'll enjoy it. It's a sci-fi space adventure RPG. I got into I spent a lot of hours. I think I have maybe about like a day and a half's worth of hours in the game.
Oh wow, yeah.
So I've got a lot of time in there. Some of that was spent trying to gain money. I tried. This is what I get into eventually for every game that's RPG or money based. Where I'm like, how can I make money? How can I level up faster? Then I go to Reddit. I'm like, okay, let's go ahead and try that out. So I did this thing like where I spent like built up my outpost. So like Fallout 4, Fallout 76, maybe not Skyrim as much, but like you can base build No Man's Sky. Yeah. And using that, you can build up a factory, you can develop parts, you can buy parts and make new things out of it. And so that gives you experience. So I read this thing where it's like you can get like up to 6,000 XP an hour if you build up your base. So I spent like a good handful of hours doing that just to see how much it worked. And I was like, okay, that's a couple levels. That's still slow and tedious. I don't want to do it. And I'm like, now I want to make money. So how do I make money? One thing is like just like go do a bunch of jumping, jump from system to system, or go to a planet. Go to a planet that is like far, far higher level than you are. Land there and kill the animals that are so low level that they don't fight back, and put it on very easy so that way they have low health, level up that way. And so I did that a little bit. So I do a lot. I get into that, but lately what I've been doing is I've been jumping from star system to star system, looking for people to shoot, leveling up my ship targeting, my ship systems. Eventually I'm going to get into the ship builder mode, which I haven't done a lot of it. I just figured out how to like add different parts and mods to it because it's not super clear. And I think that's the next thing I'm going to dive into. I just finished a mission where I got $250,000, which is a lot. And now I'm going to go.
Sounds like a lot.
now I'm going to go in there and start building a ship. People have done like Millennium Falcon type stuff, maybe like Slave One. They've done a lot of cool stuff. But
I saw a hack online where someone built the perfect ship for Starfield, which is it was basically like a box where the middle of it was completely empty. And then you just had like the outside of a box, like a hollow box, because apparently the game's AI always aims for the center of your ship when it's attacking you. And so the center of their ship is like empty. And so they could just fly through all these space battles and never get hit.
That's really awesome and funny because that's great. What I like about the space battle aspect of it. So your ship is you have your spaceships. There's different classes of ships, of course, but you can reroute power to your different systems in your ship. So if you have a laser battery, maybe a regular kind of concussive blast and missiles, your shield, your engine, and then your your jump engine.
Like a hyperspace type.
Yeah. So like when you're not in battle and you want to travel around faster, you take all the power away from your weapons, put them towards your grav drive and your engines, right? And you're like, oh shit, I'm getting attacked. So you're like rerouting power from those to your shield. And you're like, oh, well, I need to reroute some power to my engine so I can maneuver a little bit more. But that means I take some energy away from my lasers, which affects the shielding. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, that power balancing aspect is interesting. Sounds like an interesting mechanic.
Yeah, a little bit more sim-ish. So I like that they added that. But anyways, overall, it's a fun game. I'm gonna still be playing it as soon as we're done podcasting. I'm probably gonna go to play it a little bit more.
That's fair.
But as far as an RPG,
not that we're in a rush. don't
we're
get
not,
that.
We're not in a rush.
RPGs, is there any multiplayer aspect to that?
No. Zero.
Strictly single player.
And so that's a great go back into Baldur's Gate 3, because you talk about Baldur's Gate 3 being D&D. Yeah. It is a D&D game. It's based off of the 5e rule set with some modifications for certain spells and stuff like that. D&D being inherently a multiplayer game. And Baldur's Gate 3 being no exception, it does have four player ability to go through the campaign like that.
Yeah.
How do you feel about BG3 being a D&D game? Like, how does it feel like D&D?
It feels very much like D&D. And I think that was the as the hype for Baldur's Gate was building, and even as the game came out, I understood that it was like D&D, like fantasy aspect, and a lot of the characters, like you had mind flayers and things like that. And I was like, oh yeah, cool, like D&D stuff. But what fantasy role play type stuff, like most modern video games, aren't in some way connected or have their histories tied to early tabletop role playing games? Like really, so many video game mechanics come out of the early D&D mechanics. So I didn't fully appreciate the fact until I got the game and started playing it that, oh no, this is D&D. Like open up the player's handbook if you would like more information on how to play. Like the way you move, the way combat works, it's all straight out of the D&D 5e rule set. And so obviously there's some minor tweaks and things that have to be adjusted. And I would say Baldur's Gate is like playing D&D with a very strict dungeon master, right? And that strict dungeon master being the developers and playtesters of this game, that if you have 10 feet of movement, if you have 25 feet of movement, you will only move that distance, not a fraction further. So whereas if you're playing with a group and you're like, oh yeah, let me count these spaces. I have 25 feet of movement, 5, 10, well, diagonal, that still counts as 5, right? Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's about 25. Cool. Now I'm within range to attack. That doesn't always play out, right? And so the mechanics of combat was very easy to pick up on because of the fact that we'd been playing D&D for a while. So I had very little questions on that, like maybe how to execute certain spells or how to use, you know, the hotbar and different things like that. Minor adjustments there, but I figured it out pretty quickly. The other half of D&D is the role play aspect of it. Yeah. And there is a rich environment, lots of interesting characters. And this is sort of like, I grew up loving choose your own adventure books.
Oh yeah.
Right. I would always grab those from the library and reread the same book over and over again, trying to get different outcomes or see, you know, which option would be best. And that's sort of how conversations work, right? You have multiple choices. You can pick different responses based on your character or your proficiencies. And if you're trying to deceive someone or intimidate someone, it literally comes down to a D20 roll, just like it would if you're playing D&D. So, oh, I'm gonna lie to this person. All of a sudden, you know, a D20 pops up on the screen and you have to click on it, and you can add, you know, different
modifiers
and things, yeah. Modifiers and you, depending on how the roll goes, you succeed or fail. And so I think that's really interesting. And I think there's parts of this game that haven't been as present in the D&D sessions that we've played that have made me appreciate those aspects of D&D more.
Okay.
And then there's other parts where I'm like, I kind of like when we just kind of run through the role play the way we want to and just like, just let the chips fall where they may. And so
what parts do you want to see, I guess? What parts of BG3 would you want to see in our sessions? Kind of dig into that a little bit.
I don't know. I think it's just
like streamlining things or
maybe I love the creativity of our group, and but we have a tendency to like, let's make up our own campaigns or stories or things like that. And sometimes like there's stuff that's missing, or like we're like overleveled, underleveled, or like I don't know. The stories have been good. But I think the richness of this environment has been like, and like even down to like success in conversations or success in interactions. Oftentimes it's just, we'll just talk and then, yeah, okay, sure, I'll go with that. Instead of doing roles for deception, you know, insight, some of that stuff. We've gotten better at that, I think, in the last session that we did. Mm-hmm. But I think early on it was just like, we would have a conversation within the group and then be like, yeah, sure, that's how it goes. Like, and never like do roll any checks to see whether or not that's the case.
Yeah. Do you think here's a question kind of going off of that. Do you think that playing Baldur's Gate 3, seeing how that game is played a little bit, do you think that would make you change as a DM?
In some ways, yeah. I mean, I haven't been a DM in like 3 years or longer, I think. So I think a lot of experience with playing D&D would reshape how I DM. Yeah. In terms of like the things I would look for, the things I would, the checks I would ask for. And so I think it would help me. And I think the other part about the game that took some adjustment for me initially, which would also probably affect the way I think as a DM, is when I play D&D, I play a character. I create a character. I'm with a group of friends and I play that one role amongst a party of companions, right? Mm-hmm. I had to shift that mindset to I am playing a party of characters in Baldur's Gate. And I am not just playing one half-elf ranger. I have a cleric and a fighter and a barbarian and wizards and all the other people that you come across and that you can add to your camp. So now I have to think about like power balancing and okay, my one gripe being that you can only have four members in your party at any given time. So you have to like go back and swap people out for different encounters.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I have to think like, all right, well, do I want to have a wizard or do I want to have a lot of spellcasters? Do I want to have a barbarian and more, you know, physical melee going into another encounter? How do I want to arrange the team to deal with whatever is ahead of me?
Yeah.
And then all of those characters have personalities and backstories and things like that as well. So even how those characters interact in dialogue interactions can affect how the storyline goes and stuff like that. So
does it
thinking about a whole party versus an individual has been a mind shift for me.
Do you think that type of mind shift would affect how you interact with people during a live game?
To a degree, yeah. It's if I as a DM, absolutely. And thinking about how all of the people I'm playing with, you know, work together as a unit toward some sort of common goal versus but in the same way, I had a tendency to think about what I could bring to a fight or what I could bring to an interaction in D&D and continuing to have that whole party aspect and then thinking, how can we take on and know more about, okay, what are spellcasters capable? What can a wizard do? Oh, yeah. There's a warlock. Okay. Hey, what if we try this? What if, you know, come up with other solutions or things like that.
Yeah.
Hopefully without stepping on other people's toes or trying to be controlling, like, hey, you should play your character like this.
As long as nobody is a druid and then summons 60 gorillas or whatever. I think it's interesting, the like encounter design, group dynamics, the DMing piece, because as a group, right, I think of when Brett and I did Super Froggio Brothers, where we're the frog characters, they touch things and they poison them. There's a chance to poison them if they hit, right? Yeah. And so, like, I was a monk frog, and Brett was min maxing his character, we were thinking about like what can we do together type of stuff. Some other group things like okay, yeah. This character does that. Okay, they could be ranged. This person's more of a tank. They could be, you know, thinking about that and seeing what everybody brings to the table. And if you have a spellcaster who's out of spell slots, yeah, let's maybe we rethink about entering this combat right now.
Yeah.
But then from a DM's perspective, understanding like it's almost like you're playing the Baldur's Gate 3. You're looking at like, okay, who has what? Are they going to be able to match or attack or defeat this character? What are they going to do? And so I know that there's a barbarian. They're going to rage. We know that Brett's going to, you know, triple shot his bow, right? You're putting all these things together like, okay, so how was there an interesting encounter where there's a challenge? It's not going to be a walkthrough, but also I'm not doing this just to kill them for the shit of it, right? So I think that's interesting. I'm interested to see or hear about anybody who's never played at D&D and if this game motivates them to give it a shot to see how it is. And I'd be interested as also to see a new one shot or a new campaign for us to see like, hey, how are these things applying? I want to ask John since he DMs all the time still. So,
yeah, The game is very long. I've put in numerous hours, and I think I'm maybe I could be at the point where I'm moving on to the second act of I think three acts. If I choose to move forward and don't try to tie up some loose ends, but still only playing it single player. I'm curious to see how the game is different as a group. Because I think then you're releasing some of that. I have to run the whole party situation, but then you also sacrifice some of that control over everybody's character. So it allows for some more unpredictability, which I think could be interesting. I will say in Baldur's Gate, there is almost I believe there is nobody cracking random jokes in encounters or doing or doing, you know, meta commentary, which is interestingly new for me in any sort of D&D interaction. So so that's unique too.
That's fair.
But yeah, sure. It's fun. It's fun.
I'd also be interested to see because you are a character and you don't know your party's backstories. You talk to them, you get some insight from them, you start to explore their backstories over time. And it's from a single player perspective, that makes sense because it's all scripted. And I wonder if there's any bit of another interception by our Bills guy. I wonder if there's any part of that who were like, they're like, yeah, I want to do more of that. I want to do more of that kind of trying to discover what this person's backstory is. So if you and I are player characters in a campaign somewhere, like where we actually have a discussion about, like, I'm just trying to figure out, like, who is your professor? Where does he come from? Sure, there's a lot of, like, you have to make shit up on the fly type of stuff, but that fleshes out who we are.
I don't know how that would work or if that would work in terms of like trying to figure out backstories for other player characters. Cause I haven't experienced that aspect of it because I am the only player character. So there's some things that I answer as my character, but for the most part, people ask me very little about myself. It's me finding out about everybody else. Yeah,
that's fair. Yeah. Well, anyway, so do you recommend it? Do you recommend Baldur's Gate 3?
100%. Yeah, it is a lot of fun. For me, it's a casual enough game to where I feel like I can drop in and out of it. And don't have to invest a lot of time at once, but if I have the time, if I'm waking up early or staying up late, and everybody else is asleep, I can hop on for an hour or two. And completely lose that time because there's just, there's a whole world. And as I mentioned earlier, the choices you make affect everything that happens, right? And so I've already gotten to the point where I'm like, oh, they're talking about this group of individuals, like they're really bad. But I had a chance early on to essentially join those people. How would another playthrough completely change my interactions and change how the game responds and the course of this story? So that is something where I feel like there's a lot of opportunity for replay.
Yeah.
And even though I am trying to play kind of slowly, I could rush through and still have so much stuff to play in subsequent playthroughs. So, yeah. So once you finally decide to get the game and there's some sort of cross play or whatever it is, then we have the opportunity to take on the Sword Coast together as you know, whatever we want to do.
When that day happens, we'll call John Kaufelt and we'll have to schedule like an hour or two every weekend.
We'll have to schedule sessions like we did with D&D. That's what's going to have to happen.
Yeah, and I think that would be kind of fun. I think that would be kind of fun to do.
I think it would be fun. Yeah. Right. One other thing that's on our mind is Ahsoka, but we have already gone into an hour of this podcast and Ahsoka is still fresh. I've loved the episodes so far, but there's a lot more episodes to come. So hopefully we can get another episode of Apathetic Enthusiasm recorded before Rick and Morty comes back and we are in full gear for another season of Rick and Morty. So my hope is we can talk about Ahsoka in the future. But until then, use all of our links, use the emails, do all that stuff. Let us know what you think of the show. And Brandon keeps looking at the football game. So I think we're going to call it there. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Travis.
And I am Brandon, watching the Bills. And also, I have a lasagna in the oven. Got to go get it before it burns down the house.
Okay, bye, everybody. Bye.
I was looking at the timer for the oven.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.